interviews that I've done away from here, this has been the only option, and so hasn't been as frightening or as scary as I thought it would be, and also gives me a little practice, and we'll just kind of change things up just a bit. How are those New Year's resolutions coming? It's January the 12th, so we've had a little bit of time to work them out and see how they're going. Is anybody here who has abandoned any of your resolutions? You don't have to don't have to raise your hands. Is there anybody here who has abandoned all of your New Year's resolutions? Takes about 2 weeks for that to happen. We kind of go through a process, and then we find out, well, it's not working exactly like I wanted it to. And that's really what I'd like for us to think about today. We look and we do some self-examination. There's nothing in Scripture about New Year's resolutions. There's plenty in Scripture, though, about self-examination. And obviously, there are responses to that self-examination. And so there wouldn't be anything that was outside of Scripture in that process. But one of the things that is so true, the reality is, change is a pretty difficult thing to do. Unless you're like this next guy. Oh, sorry, it's the next one. These are the things that Americans are using for their resolutions this year. If you look down there quickly, maybe there's something that jumps out at you. There certainly was for me. Finances, no surprise. Relationships. There's nothing spiritual on that list at all. Nothing. It's a pretty marginal, in some areas, fairly superficial. Maybe this next guy will help you understand that just a little bit more. Just be bigger and better than I was last year, you know. Just more awesome, and everything will work out great. It is a time, though, and we'll go to the next slide, where we get to have a new beginning. And it feels like a new beginning. Sociologists keep telling us that the actual true new beginning in America is Labor Day, not New Year's. As school comes in and we really make significant behavioral changes there. But it's always going to have that psychological issue of, you know, it's a brand new year. It's a time to reevaluate. And maybe I can be better in 2020 than I was in 2019 or 15 or 00. I go, you know, we look back and that time is there to change. I'm just going to share this with you. One of the things I struggle with is getting everything here on Sunday morning. I put it all where it's supposed to be, and then I think, well, do I need to change this or change that? Or do I need to re-examine this? And so I find that sometimes I wind up losing stuff. And so I designed this whole new program so that everything will be just exactly where I want it to be. Last night I packed my backpack and everything was ready to go. All I had to do was pick it up and walk out, and I couldn't do it. I actually could not leave the house without looking in there and seeing that everything was where it was supposed to be. Now, do I have OCD? I don't think so, but I might. Get out to the car, put the key in the car. Won't start. No problem. We have two cars, but Terry's at market in the other car. So this one has to work. I'm out there plugging in the charger, trying to get it to charge up just a little bit so that I can finally get it to start. And lo and behold, it does. And I'm really late by that time. I'm really trying to get here. And I get to the corner of Broad Britain and Western. I'm only 5 minutes late. Bing, 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 bing. Honestly, I thought the train thing was going to actually hit the hood. I was right there as it came down. And you get to the place where you think, I'm not going to do this anymore. Why do I submit myself? Why subject myself to this? And we do that with a lot of our resolutions. I'm just going to forget it. It's easier when I don't do anything. And probably right now, you may be dealing with some issues where, why do I subject myself to it? New diet. And then about 10 days into the diet, we eat a piece of pie. Well, what happens next? Well, the diet's blown, so I'm off in another area. Or do I say, no, I made a mistake. Didn't want to do that, didn't plan to do that. So I'm going to keep moving in the direction that I'd really like to move and going in that particular way. Satan is the master at tripping us up. And that's really what he wants to do. He was working on me this morning. He's working at us with our food intake. He's working with us for our study plans. He's working with our relationships, not in a positive way. But if you've identified a way that you need to be better in this year, then he has already identified the ways to trip you up in that process. And one of the things that really complicates that is we have a tendency to just look theologically at things and say, okay, this is what Scripture says, therefore that's the way it's going to be. And I'm not saying that's not true, but the reality is there's more than one Scripture. And we can become very myopic in looking at one thing and only that one thing and examining that one thing without looking at the balancing Scriptures that teach us some other situations. There's the reality of how life really works. Wouldn't you love to stop sinning today? To never again do something that would be offensive to God? That would be a wonderful thing to do. And sometimes we set ourselves up to fail because we want to make that promise. God, I'm not going to sin again. And Satan says, oh, yes, you are. And when we do, we're embarrassed, we're frustrated, we're disappointed, we feel like we've been tripped up. And so we're really stopping, we're quitting in our approach to overcoming a particular thing that might be a challenge to us in this particular life. Sin is dangerous. And we can't develop an attitude where it's like, well, you know, I'm just going to take it and see how it goes. When we even acknowledge to ourselves that, you know, I make mistakes, then sometimes that's a little bit difficult. A lot of men deal with pornography issues. That's a struggle for a lot of people. Some statistical analysis, some surveys put it above 90% among Christians. It's a very difficult thing. And one of the issues that people are going to reinforce there or use as a strategy is you have to celebrate the positive streaks. You know, if you manage to go a week, then you celebrate that. Well, when I talk to people about that, people say, wait. I can't celebrate a week of success. I did something wrong. I can't celebrate a month. I can't celebrate 6 months. And yet, that's how it really does work. Not that we're proud, not that we accept the fact that we did something sinful. It's okay. Romans chapter 6, verse 1 says, what shall we say then? Shall we go on sinning so that grace may increase? By no means, Paul says. I like King James better because he says, God forbid. God forbid that we become so casual about the sin in our lives that it's just like, oh, well, that was one. It's no big deal. I won't sin again. And when we get to that place, then we're reminded of how little power we really have. Go on to the next chapter, Romans chapter 7, 18 through 20. You've heard these words before. Paul says, for I know that good itself does not dwell in me, that is, in my sinful nature. For I have the desire to do what is good, but I cannot carry it out. For I do not do the good I want to do, but the evil I do not want to do, this I keep on doing. Now, if I do what I do not want to do, it is no longer I who does it, but it is sin living in me that does it. Paul, who's written much of the theology that we debate about, Paul, who's told us so much about sin and being held captive by sin, Paul, who has just given us so much information, and yet as he looks at his own life, he writes honestly to us and says, I can't do it either. I want to. I try to. I intend to. I hope to. But in reality, I mess up. And this morning, that's really what I'd like to try to remind you. If you have a plan for this new year and you've already messed up the plan, don't quit. Because that's what Satan wants you to do. If you'll just stop, then everything will be fine with him. Instead, there are important things that we can learn. There are important ways that we can grow. I started trying to think about Bible characters that might be a good example of this kind of situation. And the guy who kept popping back into my mind was Samson. Samson, very unique, raised in a special situation, given the power of God. Sometimes people refer to Samson as a he-man with a she-woman problem. But that's not true. When you look carefully at Samson, his problem is basically impulse control. He can't control his impulses. He wants what he wants when he wants it. He sees the Philistine woman and says to his parents, "Get her for me." And they say, "Well, listen, let's talk about this a bit." And his answer to that is, "Get her for me. That's the way I want this to go." They have the wedding. And you remember the riddle, 30 sets of clothes. And she finds out the riddle, tells the people in the wedding party. And, of course, Samson doesn't mind paying 30 sets of clothes. He just goes out and kills 30 guys, takes their clothes and gives them to do the bet. Then the things really start to deteriorate quickly from there. He really wants to be mad at them, and so he tries 300 foxes in sets of two, burns down the territory. Can you imagine what kind of damage that could have done? He was lucky they didn't have PETA at that particular point in time. And then it gets serious. He's trapped in the city of Gaza. What's he going to do? They've got the gates locked. Just picks up the gates and carries them off. And then there's Delilah. And as many times as I read that story, and as many times as I look at it, and as much examination as you care to give to it, why in the world did he ever tell her? How did he be driven to that point? Well, you start looking at some background things. He's rather ego-involved. And he's able to be manipulated because of his ego. And it appears that that's playing a role through this whole process. The Philistines are upon you. What do? Shave his head, or that's what Delilah's done. They're able to take control of him. And they gouge out his eyes. Now, notice they didn't say that they surgically blinded him. They gouged out his eyes. This whole time, God's been waiting for Samson to grow up. He's been waiting for Samson to measure up to the power that he's placed inside of him. And Samson serves as a judge, and he does good things, and he's able to strike at the Philistines. But I just can't help but believe that God was just waiting for that moment when he would finally get there. A couple of decades, it appears to take, before Samson steps up and says, "Okay, enough about me. God, give me the strength to do one final thing." And that's what he's able to do. It's about growing up, folks. It's about that little song, "Growing Up in the Lord." And you hear those children's voices singing that song. And that's such a thrilling kind of thing to experience. And yet, that's what God has in mind for us, whether we're 10 or whether we're 80. He wants us to finish growing up. Ephesians chapter 4, verse 15 says, "Instead, speaking the truth in love, we will grow to become in every respect the mature body of him who is the head, that is Christ." We're going to grow up. Why? Well, you see it on bumper stickers. I'm a work in progress. And that's the truth. None of us are finished. None of us are done. None of us have arrived at the place where God fully wants us to be. We're a work in progress. And as much as we'd like to stop sinning, we're not able to do that totally and completely. And because of that, things trip us up. But when they do, we have a choice to make. I can get back up and I can continue my growth process, or I can surrender. Galatians chapter 5, verse 7. "You were running a good race," Paul says to the Galatians. Who cut in on you to keep you from obeying the truth? Years ago, there was an Olympian, Mary Decker Slaney. It was kind of a given that she was going to win the gold medal. But somebody cut in on her, hurt her, damaged her leg. She fell in the Olympics, didn't win any kind of medal. Paul says, what's going on here? You're being tripped up. Hebrews chapter 2, starting in verse 1. Therefore, since we are surrounded by such a great cloud of witnesses, let us throw off everything that hinders and the sin that so easily entangles. You're running a race. You don't want to be focused on the ground. But if you're not, at least to some degree, pretty easy to trip. And that's Satan's place. He's wallowing on the ground, waiting for the opportunity just to trip you up. And we look around and we say, I don't know, maybe there are opportunities to do it better than this. For years and years and years, hundreds of years historically, the chariots were the weapon of choice for any conqueror. They were able to do just about whatever if you had enough chariots. And the chariots got bigger and they got stronger and they put blades on the wheels and various kinds of things. And then apparently, this is going to sound incredibly simple, but apparently the problem of chariot warfare was resolved simply by Alexander the Great thinking about it. He watched those chariots charging into armies, and he said, you know, if when the chariot came, the army would just step aside, then you could attack from the back and defeat the chariots. Chariots continued to be part of culture, but not warfare. People haul things around in them, but their role in warfare was over when they figured out that vulnerability from the back. Satan is constantly looking for our vulnerability. But God says to us, he doesn't allow us to be completely vulnerable. 1 Corinthians chapter 10, verse 13. No temptation has overtaken you except what is common to mankind. Everything you're experiencing today, somebody else has experienced. It isn't new. It isn't unique to you. It's something that's going on in other people's lives. And God is faithful and will not let you be tempted beyond what you can bear. He won't let you have more than you can take. He won't let you be tripped up more than you can manage. But when you are tempted, he will also provide a way out so that you can endure it. There's a way to deal with those chariots that look so overwhelmingly impressive. And God says, if you'll listen to me, if you'll walk with me, if you'll use my resources, if you'll hang on, if you'll grow up, you can achieve the victory that you want in your life. This morning, if there are changes you need to make, you may need to make private changes. Start the process of doing that. You may need to make some public changes. And if so, we'd be glad to help you in that process while we stand and sing this morning.